I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Ironically, weirdly enough, on a Sunday afternoon. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. This basically means we may use some bad words. And we may use some bad words today because we have things to say. But anyhow, enough about that. I want to welcome you to the show. On this afternoon episode, this is sort of like a matinee. We're going to be doing a retro review. We're going to be talking about Babylon 5, the TV pilot called The Gathering from February of 1993. Before we do that, I'll just introduce myself real quickly. My name is Dave Beatty. I'm one of your hosts. For nearly the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer. Worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Justice League of America, Batman Incorporated, and Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Oh, please, Eric, please tell the folks who will be watching or listening at home some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, everyone. My name is Eric Alexander, also known as BassGod14. That's BassGod14, not BassGod. It's BassGod like a bass guitar. And I'm the chief financial officer of a small production company in Arizona called Bad Bob Productions. We're actually going to be filming in California this coming weekend. So basically a week from now, I'll be in California filming for a film project called Staycation, which I'm very excited about. I'm also very excited about our format change. Even though this is going to be sort of untested ground for us, this is not only a different day, which we introduce a different day on Thursday. Normally we broadcast on Wednesdays, and we are no longer going to be broadcasting on Wednesdays, at least for the foreseeable future. And we did start out with our first Thursday broadcast, but this is even different because not only is it a different day, it's a completely different time slot. So we're experimenting with the idea of doing this sort of afternoon format that's supposed to be kind of like a prelude to a matinee for you. So we're going to be coming up with sort of retro classics, things either, you know, I recommend or Dave recommends, or sometimes maybe we'll both recommend. Who knows? We do agree from time to time on things. And we're going to be basically trying to say, hey, it's a lazy Sunday afternoon, hopefully for you. Hopefully you're off right now. Maybe you went to church earlier. Maybe you didn't. Maybe you just barely got up and you're just like, who are these guys? But basically, we're going to be trying to, every Sunday, we're going to be trying to talk to you about something that maybe you could watch, you know, this afternoon or this evening after our broadcast. So, you know, in that respect, our first episode is going to be about Babylon 5 and specifically the pilot, The Gathering.
Okay, so I'm going to start off here. I'm going to read the summary real quick. And this is a retro review. So what's going to happen is we're going to talk about how we originally heard about this particular, this is a TV pilot. Our initial reactions when we originally watched it, if we did watch it, sometimes maybe it's something one of us hasn't seen. Then we're going to talk about how we feel about it today in a more modern contemporary context. So those are your components. How did you first hear about it? How did you feel about it when you first saw it? And then last but not least, how do you feel about it today? Then we're going to go into a pop culture news segment. If we got some pop culture news, potentially a little bit of streaming wars. So I'm going to give you the summary here for this. The pilot, this is the opening of a crucial space station is put in jeopardy when the commanding officer is accused of the attempted murder of a diplomat. That's coming from IMDb. All right. So let's just start off with the basic thing. How did we first hear about it? Eric, why don't you go first? How did you first hear about Babylon 5?
So I definitely remember Babylon 5 being on my radar when it first came out. And I do remember being aware of the pilot coming out. I even think I saw a little bit of it because I have that vague memory of like sort of channel surfing and watching a few scenes. But I do know I didn't watch the whole thing. And I don't know if I was trying to watch something else, you know, at the same time, because I did do that quite a bit, you know, in this era. I still do it. I still go back and forth between two different programs, you know, on the television. I still do that because I still use an antenna. even though I do have a lot of the streaming services like HBO Max, which is how I actually watched this version recently, was on HBO Max. I still have an antenna. And so I can't recall exactly what was going on. I know that there was some controversy about Babylon 5 and Star Trek, and I think we will delve at least a little bit into that during our review, because it is kind of significant, especially when we talk about back in the day. I think maybe that was kind of on my mind a little bit, maybe that rivalry between Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine that was basically right there from the start, and allegations back and forth of, you know, one show ripping off the other. Which, by the way, officially, I am totally a Trekkie, but I do believe that Deep Space Nine is the one that is far more guilty of ripping off Babylon 5 than the other way around. I'm going to say that straight up, because I have watched the entire series, since then. But back in the day, I think there was a bias. I mean, I was a Trekkie, and I think there was a bias, and I think maybe I just checked it out a little bit and was like, whatever, this is okay, or this is not so okay. And then I flipped to something else. So I do remember being aware of it when it first came out, but I know I didn't watch the entire pilot when it first aired. I do know that.
So I think the way that I, in all honesty, first heard about Babylon 5 was just ads like in the comic books, because they used to have like nice full color ads for Babylon 5. I know it was on television, and I remember kind of seeing like an episode here and there. But I was never like a diehard Babylon 5 watcher. I think I've mentioned that before, that if we were to delve into Babylon 5, for me, this is mostly new territory. I mean, like I said, except for seeing an episode here or there, I know I had a friend who was all excited about some kind of, it wasn't Space Rangers, but some kind of Ranger thing or something in relation to Babylon 5. That's all I can remember. He's kept going on
There was a Rangers, because the Rangers are something that happens later in Babylon 5. Little spoiler alert, I guess. So yeah, there is actually a series, a spinoff series that was about the Babylon Rangers. That was a thing. You're not like hallucinating or whatever. That was a short-lived spinoff, which I think hasn't seen the light of day since it was canceled.
Well, I was just going to say, because I know he was super, super excited about it. And I remember we watched like some TV movie or something that kind of tied into it. You know, it's weird because I think of Babylon 5. I don't, even though rewatching this pilot, I could see where people could accuse Babylon 5 of borrowing from Star Trek, but, you know, and a few episodes I kind of saw here and there, you know, in relation to Deep Space Nine. Yes, I can see that. It's weird because when I think back on it, I think of Babylon 5 in a similar context as Alien Nation. But the difference is, and I don't know why that is, but Alien Nation I watched pretty religiously. Babylon 5 was just kind of like a every once in a while kind of thing. If it just happened to be on, I did not dislike the show, but it just wasn't something that was like appointment viewing for me. Like, I have to see the new episode of Babylon 5. And to be fair, I felt the same way about Deep Space Nine too. You know, I missed a portion of Deep Space Nine and then came back to it later on, and then discovered what a lot of people had been saying for quite some time, that it was actually much better than I realized it actually was. So as far as Babylon 5 is concerned, for me personally, I just mostly remember seeing ads for it in the comic books, and I was familiar with it, but it wasn't something I sought out. So I wasn't terribly knowledgeable about Babylon 5. If people were talking about Babylon 5, I would just kind of stare off into space, because I'd seen it, but I didn't know that much about it. So to be honest.
And I do want to kind of mention, again, with that rivalry, because it's hard to discuss Babylon 5 without the rivalry to Deep Space Nine. And I wish the opposite was true, because so many people will praise Deep Space Nine and talk about Deep Space Nine, and then they leave Babylon 5 out of the conversation completely, which I think is grossly unfair. But I stuck with Deep Space Nine probably for at least the first 2.5, maybe 3 seasons. And I always think it's funny, because then when I went back and saw it, ironically on TNT, which is the same place that Babylon 5 ended up on its last season, It actually ended up on TNT, but TNT did a next gen Deep Space Nine back to back thing for a while. And that's how I actually got back into Deep Space Nine and then realized how much better it got in the fourth season. I mean, I think everybody agrees when Worf comes on the show, it really it really turns into almost a different show. And it's much better because it goes from that episodic format that really wasn't working very well, you know, on Deep Space Nine to that serialized format, which, of course, again, a lot of people say they copied from Babylon 5, because I do want to say it's pretty clear when you watch this that they kind of had an idea what they were doing from the beginning. And you know, J. Michael Straczynski has always maintained that unlike Deep Space Nine, where they kind of came up with this story a lot later. Again, it really didn't happen until season 4. Where they decided to kind of do this, you know, intricate story, you know, that was connected, which was new for Star Trek. Star Trek really didn't do that. Star Trek generally was episodic in nature. But Babylon 5 from the very beginning was meant to be a serialized show with this overarching story. And I think you can definitely see that in the pilot.
Yeah, there's a lot of world building. There's a lot of setting.
Huge world building. Like,
yeah, and a lot of setting kind of like the pieces in place.
Lots of exposition.
For sure.
Lots of exposition. Lots of exposition. Almost to the point that it, for somebody who already knows what's going on, it can be a little bit weird. Like if you didn't see this episode first, which is the case for me, it does get a little bit weird because it's like, well, I know all this stuff already. But of course, the idea was this is the first episode, so you don't know anything, right? If you'd seen this episode first, you wouldn't know anything that was going on. So it is exposition heavy, but I think it's because, again, they knew where they were going from the beginning.
Right. And if you are watching the show live right now, we would like to know what you like, how your initial impression of how did you first hear about Babylon 5? Please comment from wherever you are. All you have to do is just post a comment. If you're watching on Facebook, you post a comment. If you're watching on YouTube, just post a comment. And then what we'll do is we'll put your comment live up here on the screen while we're talking about the show. We want to know your opinion. We want to know how you first heard about Babylon 5. That's the whole point of this, is hopefully for us to have a fun discussion this afternoon. All right. So now that we've talked about our initial, like how we heard about Babylon 5, then the next portion of a retrospective is going to be, okay, how did we feel about it when we first saw this particular, you know, TV pilot, you know, again, called The Gathering. All right. Now, this originally aired in 1993. I was kind of like a casual Babylon 5 viewer. So I don't have any recollections about seeing this back in the day because I never saw it. So the first time I saw it was relatively recently because we were discussing doing this here for the show. So my viewing of this is going to be fairly recent, and then a rewatch. So that's going to be where I'm coming from. So I don't have any feelings about having saw it back in the day. Eric, did you see this originally when it was on television, either like the original broadcast or the TNT? Like, I think TNT did they cut this together differently and then rebroadcast it. I did do a little bit of research into this. Did you see either one of those?
Yeah, and I do think that's something that we definitely need to be talking about, is the fact that I think both of us, the recent version we watched was on HBO Max, right, Dave? You watched the HBO Max version, which is the TNT version. It is not the original broadcast version of the pilot, which I would be interested to see exactly what the differences are. I do have like a little Wikipedia article I can refer to in the background where they do identify some of the key differences between the two versions. But I would be interested in actually watching the original pilot. Now, as I mentioned before, I have a vague recollection that when this first aired, I was aware of it and I did watch some of the episode. And the more I think about it, I think what happened was I saw the end of it, because I think what happened was I missed it. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, as you mentioned, it wasn't appointment TV for me. This is kind of a new thing. The rivalry with Star Trek was already starting. There was already kind of bad, you know, bad juju going on and allegations going on about basically theft of intellectual property and ideas and things. It's pretty nasty, actually, at one point. And I think that was already on my mind. And I just kind of, I don't think I intentionally missed it. I think, like I said, I used to do a lot of channel surfing and I was aware of it. And I think what ended up happening was I like saw the end of it and that was it. And I really didn't see anything else. And that kind of was like, that was kind of the way it was with Babylon 5 for me. It's like, I would switch between it and something else, but it was never like appointment TV. And again, because I think of that loyalty to Star Trek. And that's kind of the way that I felt about it at the time, not really knowing anything about what was really going on or what had really happened, and not also really giving the show a real solid chance at the time. I actually got into the show much later, just a few years ago, when it was broadcast on Comet. And Comet is one of those digital sub-channels that is on the air. You know, as I mentioned, I do have an antenna. And so I watched this show on Comet, which, by the way, the transfer on Comet of Babylon 5 was really bad. I know that there's some people that talk about these different versions of Babylon 5, you know, through the years with the DVDs and things like that, different broadcast versions. And the one they had on Comet, the transfer was really bad to the point that the effects, which are already, you know, by their nature, the effects are dated because this is very early CGI, which was cutting edge at the time. It was really kind of cutting edge and almost controversial at the time that they were using so much CGI and not using practical models as they still were on Deep Space Nine, for instance. But, you know, it was one of those kind of crazy things on Comet where the transfer was just horrendous. I mean, it was really, really bad. But that didn't take away from the story. And I ended up like watching Babylon 5 all the way through from wherever I picked it up on Comet. And strangely enough, I did not pick it up at the pilot. I came in, like, I feel like it was like episode two. I just missed the pilot and I watched the series all the way through. And then when it came back around on Comet, I finally saw Babylon 5, The Gathering. And again, it was on Comet and the transfer wasn't that great. This was only a few years ago. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was weird for me because I had seen the entire series, basically, you know, maybe missing an episode here or there, but I had basically seen the entire series and knew the entire story. And then I watched the pilot finally from beginning to end, which is, again, kind of a weird experience. That's what I was getting to about also the exposition, because I know all the players and, you know, what they're about and their backgrounds and all that stuff from watching the series. So going back and watching it, you know, even when it was going through with Comet, it was interesting to see, like, you know, there is a lot of exposition in this, which is totally necessary for a new viewer. But when you watched it the way that I did, it's a little weird. It's a little different.
Well, that's interesting. Like I said, my watching of this is fairly recent. So I guess at this point we're probably good. Maybe to just go ahead and start talking about how we feel about, you know, having just recently rewatched it. Again, if you are watching live from wherever you are, please comment. We want to know your thoughts. You know, tell us how you felt about Babylon 5 back in the day if you watched it. You know, or tell us about how you first heard about it. We'll put it here up on the screen. We want to know what you think. All right. So, you know, having recently rewatched this. Well, not rewatched it. Having recently watched, well, I kind of did rewatch it because I watched this pilot again when we first started talking about doing Babylon 5 for the show. So I did watch it. I got about four episodes into the regular, the actual series on, again, watching on HBO Max, right? And so having rewatched the pilot, here's my thing. I like the writing. Like, the writing's really solid. I like the makeup. For the most part, I like the design work. I can be pretty forgiving of special effects because I understand. I probably understand better than a lot of people where CGI was in 1993 because I was doing CGI in 1993. So I understand that for the time, this was good stuff. Okay, this was like Eric said, this was cutting edge, you know. For 1993, this was cutting edge, okay? And about a few years after this, actually, we would have started pre-production for Star Gods, and that's when I got really big into CGI. And we were doing stuff that was probably about similar to this quality, about 95, 96. But again, for the time, this is pretty good looking stuff. My two biggest things actually having rewatched this, I like the world building. I like the actors. You know, there's some of it where it looks like maybe they only did one take. You know what I mean? Because it's probably an expensive show to shoot back in the day. So they probably only got one take. You know, that's kind of what it looks like. You know, maybe they did a read through and they did one or two takes and then they were moving on. You know, that's how television used to be shot. You know, they didn't spend a lot of time, you know, just, you know, massaging the scene and, you know, approaching it like film. A lot of television shows today, they're kind of shot more like film. You know, they're not really shot like television anymore. But you could tell this was shot as television, number one. And I prefer the tweaks that they made to the costumes and the props and everything, actually, when it actually goes to series. In addition to that, this is a perfect example. You know,
I felt like I knew you were going, and that's why I brought up that picture.
It's the tweaks that they made between the pilot and the actual series episode in some ways almost reminds me of if you watch The Cage and then you watch, and talking about Star Trek original series, if you watch The Cage and then you turn around and then you watch, you know, Where No Man Has Gone Before, right? Two pilots for Star Trek, vastly different, very similar, like similar beats, like similar ideas, but they've made a lot of cosmetic changes and they've kind of made some format changes. And that's kind of the difference.
And casting changes. That's important to note as well.
It's interesting, just how kind of different the pilot is from the actual series. And I do prefer the tone, the approach, the look, the style, of the actual series as opposed to this pilot. But like I said, I'm not going to be too heavy-handed with it because, again, like I said, this is clearly, you know, they were figuring it out. That's literally what you're doing in a pilot. You're putting this together for the first time. You're looking at it and you're going, "Oh, we should fix that. Oh, maybe we should fix that." You know, so it makes sense that they would make adjustments and changes. I think the two hardest things for me to understand watching this is, number one, it's Delanne, right? Delanne. Yeah, her makeup is. This character's makeup is so different from the actual show. Like, it's almost like night and day. The first time I saw this character, I thought, is she dying? Like, she looks like she's, is she going to morph into, like, is she molting into the version that we know? Like, it's just kind of weird, like, how different this character
which looks is. Oddly enough, eventually that is what happens, but.
Well, I didn't know that. I just thought that she might be going through a change.
Not from this version, but right. Those who have seen the show know what I'm talking about. She actually does undergo a significant metamorphosis, and it does have a radical effect on her appearance, but not from this version.
And I will say that this pilot has the worst gun props I have ever seen in my life. These are hands down the worst hand weapon, rifle weapon props I have ever seen. It literally looks like they took a remote control and stretched it out and stuck a handle on it. It is not a good look. I am so glad they got rid of that stuff. That stuff looks so bad. It was just, I was just like, oh my gosh, that's awful. So that's where I'm going to calm down on this production. Someone should have seen those really weird hand weapons and when they were shooting this, and they went, oh, we got to change that. That's not a good look. That's not a good look, man. That is so stupid, but those are going to be my two most jarring things. And those are the things I'm going to pick on the heaviest because I can't imagine they saw those on film and they were like, oh, that looks fine.
Well, it's kind of funny because of the Babylon 5 Star Trek rivalry. And of course there's accusations both ways. And you would think if Babylon 5 was going to steal anything from Star Trek, it wouldn't be the Dustbusters from the original season of Star Trek, The Next Generation. The famous Dustbuster phasers that everybody hated and thought literally looked like dustbusters. And the handheld weapons do look kind of similar, don't they? I mean, they really do. They do.
Well,
they do kind of evoke a little bit of that next gen design.
But and, the bad version. And it goes even further because by the time they get to the rifles, they got the Mega Dustbusters.
the Mega Dustbuster.
and then it seems like the big change was, well, we'll make the handle out of wood because it looks like it's wood. And I was just like, that's not a good look. So that's going to be my most...
Babylon 5, you know, obviously did end up with their own very sort of iconic weapon that was really different. In my mind, it was really different because it was very small. It was very compact. They didn't seem to feel a need to overcompensate, which is rampant in sci-fi. I mean, overcompensating with your gun is pretty rampant in sci-fi, especially, you know, a lot of the lower budget stuff and sort of the cult classics, if you will. Gosh, even Star Wars, let's face it, you know, there's a lot of overcompensation with the guns, you know what I mean? But they ended up with a very streamlined, a very compact weapon that did become, in my mind, quite iconic with Babylon 5. But they didn't have that for the pilot,
right? And I would say that weapon that they wind up with in the actual series itself, the thing I like about that one too is that feels like it harkens back to Buck Rogers, you know, because Buck Rogers had the more compact, you know, handheld weapons eventually, even in Buck Rogers. So prefer that. But
it is true.
The first time that Garibaldi pulls out his hand weapon, I was like, what in the hell is he holding in his hand? That is a bad look. And so that's going to be my most heavy-handed criticism, because overall, I quite liked The Gathering. I mean, I can see that they're still figuring it out. So, you know, and again, it's weird because I sometimes feel like original series Star Trek doesn't feel as dated as certain things can feel for me because I grew up watching that. It's always been that way. You know what I mean? It's never been any different. The only way it was different was when they remastered it and then they put in the new CGI effects, which I prefer right. to the original versions, just because at least now I can tell that, oh, that's actually a different ship. That's not just a dot. You know, like that.
Right.
And so for me, that's kind of like a big thing. And that was a change that was, in my mind, good. And, you know, for Babylon 5, for this pilot, that's, you know, my biggest heavy-handed criticism is going to be, which they actually fixed. That's the irony. The things I'm criticizing, they did fix, right? They adjusted the makeup. They adjusted the costumes. And they... you know, fix the issue with the hand, because the hand weapon was the biggest thing. I literally just could not understand what I was looking at first. And it was really, really, it really threw me off. that is the thing that took me out of the show the most. But other than that, you can tell it's a television production from the 90s. You got a guy with a ponytail, you know, like it's definitely a production from the 90s. But I don't feel like it diminishes it necessarily, because if you're engaged with the storytelling and if you're following along with what they're doing and you're enjoying the world building, there's a lot of subtle touches in this that's really kind of neat that I know from having watched some of the episodes after that they're going to build upon. And that's the thing that makes it really kind of cool. You know, what was your thoughts on this, having just recently rewatched it?
Well, to back up a little bit to the previous viewing, one of the things that's really different for me is that because the transfer on Comet was so poor, I had this really kind of weird experience the first time watching the pilot that I actually thought it looked better than the rest of the series. This is because, again, the Comet transfer was so poor. And what they did was when you saw The Gathering on Comet, they did something with the color correction that made it a lot darker and actually made it look much more cinematic. Dave, they actually, in my opinion, made it look much more like film than television. And again, it was simply color correction. It was basically that the aired on Comet, Babylon 5, The Gathering, just looked literally darker. It was just a darker film. And they tried to do more color in the series on the Comet version, but it didn't work because the transfer was so bad. Now on HBO Max, it's the opposite. it really is the opposite. If you watch the rest of the series, and I did watch a couple of the other, you know, I actually went to several other episodes and was even looking like at key moments with the CGI and stuff like that. For the rest of the series, episode two going on, it seems, the transfer is pretty excellent on HBO Max. Even the dated CGI looks pretty darn good. I felt like they really actually put some work into this. But they didn't so much for Babylon 5 The Gathering, which once again is not the broadcast version. This is the TNT rebroadcast version. And I am very curious if we'll ever get to see the original version ever again. But this TNT version, what they did was, at least on the HBO Max transfer, they did some interesting things. Like, for instance, you'll notice in the rest of the series on HBO Max, it's basically that 4:3 like TV ratio where they got the black bars on the side, right? And some people hate that. Some people, you know, hate that. Some people love it. But it works. It really works for the rest of the show because the color is vibrant. The dated effects really don't look that bad. In fact, I think sometimes they actually look pretty darn good, especially comparing to what I come from with that Comet version that was so terrible and the CGI just looked god awful. Okay. In this version, what happens is it's kind of the reverse because they did something completely different with The Gathering. You can tell it was like a different team or something, or they just, I don't know, phoned it in or something like that. The transfer is nowhere near as good as it is in the rest of the show. Some of the CGI does look very dated and sloppy, which is kind of funny because there are other scenes where the CGI looks pretty good. It looks serviceable. Even by today's standards, it looks okay. You know what I mean? Whereas other scenes just look incredibly cheesy and look really, really bad. So it's kind of funny what Warner Brothers has done here as far as the transfer, because like I said, with the Comet version, I thought the Gathering actually looked much better than the rest of the series. I thought it looked more cinematic, more of a film style than a television style, but it's completely the opposite now. Although I would say that the rest of the series going forward, the colors are extremely vibrant. So it definitely doesn't give me like a film vibe. You know what I mean? Also the 4:3 ratio doesn't give me that film vibe, but it looks better. I mean, just bottom line, it just looks really good. Whereas I think the HBO Max version of Babylon 5 The Gathering does have some visual problems beyond, you know, just the nature of like you were saying, like the picture we have right now, beyond the fact that some of the aesthetics just weren't quite there yet. It's important to note that Babylon 5 The Gathering is a true pilot in the sense that it was made to sell the show, and they did something a little bit different, which is that they actually put it out there and let the public essentially decide whether they were going to go forward with this show or not instead of the suits, which I do like. I think that's really cool. I wish more shows did that. There's a lot of lost pilots out there that we've never seen with different cast members. Like Gilligan's Island comes to mind. I know that the original Gilligan's Island pilot, I believe the professor was a different cast member, and I think Marianne was a different cast member. And they were added later for the actual series. They changed it, which is very typical for pilots. Pilots do that all the time. They will recast people in key roles, but typically you never see the pilot. Star Trek is a good example of where you did see the pilot, but you saw in a completely different format. The original pilot, of course, was completely repackaged and, you know, made to be like sort of this little flashback episode in the original Star Trek series. It wasn't really ever meant to see the light of day, but they did it because they were trying to save money. If you know that story, they were trying to save some money and production costs and said, hey, we've got this whole pilot. Let's just sort of repackage it. And then we can air it as a two-parter for Star Trek to basically save some money. So very often you never see the pilots. And I appreciate the fact that we do get to see the original Babylon 5 pilot, that it has been preserved, that it was aired. And also the decision by the network at the time, which that network no longer exists. I can't remember what that network was called. But it's kind of funny because originally Babylon 5 was on a network. People forget that. It was just a very short-lived network that only broadcast for like 2 hours a day or something crazy like that. It was a really weird thing they were doing. And I appreciate the fact that the suits allowed the public to see the pilot. And then, you know, based on the public reaction, based on the ratings and basically the feedback they got, they decided whether they were going to go forward. Now, the bad thing about that is there's a full year between the pilot and basically when the series starts in terms of production. And I think that's also considered part of canon, is that the events of Babylon 5, The Gathering, are supposed to have been a year before when, you know, the, by episode two, when the rest of the show starts. And in a lot of ways, I feel like it shouldn't be called episode two. The episode that comes after this should be episode one, and this should just be considered the pilot. You know what I mean? I think that's a little weird that HBO Max decided to name this as episode one. It's not. It should just be like the pilot, and the second episode should be episode one, because that's when the actual series started. This was a standalone thing. Again, it came out a year before the rest of the series did. So that's important to remember. And comparing it to the original Star Trek pilot, and then, of course, the second pilot, and quite frankly, even the first episode that was aired, right? Because the first episode of Star Trek that was aired, you know, it had McCoy. You know, the second pilot didn't. And I have to imagine it had been jarring for people a little bit when they saw the first episode of Star Trek that was aired, which had McCoy, and then all of a sudden they show the pilot, the second pilot, and McCoy's not there. The uniforms are different. The props are kind of different. The phasers are different. You know, it must have been kind of weird. But they did that for a specific reason, because they understood that once McCoy gets there, that's actually the format of the original series. So they went through two pilots before they got it right, before they figured it out. And they didn't air the original pilot until much later, again, in a reformatted way. And the second pilot is kind of disjointed. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird. It doesn't quite fit with the broadcast order because, you know, it wasn't broadcast first. So, you know, so you got to give Babylon 5 some credit here of what they did. And the fact that I think they came much closer to the mark right out the gate than Star Trek ever did. You know what I mean? So granted, they also had the legacy of Star Trek and could learn from some of their mistakes. But, you know, clearly, like, you know, this image that we have up here of Delenn is really interesting to me, because one of the things that I see about it that I find interesting, especially today with the way things are today, is there's a certain androgyny to Delenn in this look. And, of course, Delenn became extremely feminine in the rest of the series, especially after the metamorphosis that I was alluding to. Which I'm not trying to get into spoiler territory if you haven't seen the rest of Babylon 5, but she does go through a metamorphosis in the show, in her look. But her look when she starts out is still different than what we see in this image that I have up right now from the pilot. And I do feel like there's a very androgynous sort of thing going on or idea that they had about the Membari for the pilot, and then they decided to drop it for whatever reason. Perhaps because, you know, they did know where the story was going and they felt maybe it would be too radical of a change. I also have to imagine the actors just didn't like it. You know what I mean? I imagine that they may have complained about the makeup and said, this is too much, you know? And also I do know for a fact that when they cast Bill Mumy, who's not in the pilot, but he comes in the second episode and he was cast as a Membari. I do know that he had a lot of issues with the makeup. So they may have actually adjusted the makeup specifically for him to get him on the show. Basically, he would say, I'm not doing all this. You know, what we see here in this image, I could see him saying, no, I'm not doing that. You know, if you want me in the show, I am not going to go through all that. It is a very different look. It really is. Even though the essentials are still there, there's a different feeling. Again, Delenn in the series is very feminine, even with her original look. I think she's very, very feminine, and this look in the original pilot is very, you know, it's very like, you know, androgynous. That's the only thing I can say, you know. So as far as my thoughts on the show today, I do enjoy it. It is difficult to watch in reverse. So, like, if you have watched a lot of Babylon 5 and then you go watch The Gathering, it can be a little bit weird, because I've said it a million times now, it is extremely exposition heavy. But it is perfect for if you have never watched Babylon 5, because it will tell you who the players are, where they're at, and you get a real sense of who the aliens are and what, you know, everything's laid out. You know that the Earth and the Membari had a war. that it ended under very mysterious circumstances, that they were losing the war, that Earth was losing the war, which I thought was always kind of a neat twist for Babylon 5, that Earth was losing the war badly, you know? We have the Narn, who were formerly slaves of the Centauri. And the Centauri, a lot of ways, remind me of like the Russian Federation today. You know what I mean? Like they're sort of like this empire in decline, but they still have real teeth. You know what I mean? You don't get that in the pilot. You get that later, the teeth part. But they definitely are that empire in decline. And you get that sense of that sort of animal that's trapped in a corner and they're about to strike. You know, and that stuff is set up, I think, quite well in the pilot, because they do show how kind of dejected they are because they were this once grand empire and now they're in decline, you know? So, and then of course the Vorlons, right? The Ambassador Kosh's race, they're incredibly mysterious. I've always enjoyed Ambassador Kosh as a character. Unfortunately, you get almost nothing about Ambassador Kosh in this first episode. But that's kind of the way it goes for the rest of the series. You always just get little bits and pieces. But I always found that character fascinating because he is so mysterious and his race is so mysterious. And you don't find out until later what they're really all about. And it's not something I think anybody really necessarily sees coming. It's just like, oh, really? That's what these guys are. That's kind of crazy. So everything is set up in this. And that's what I like about it. Again, if you went backwards like me, it can be a little bit exposition heavy because you already know all this information and the dialogue gets a little chunky and a little clunky at some points if you already know what's going on. But it's a great primer for the Babylon 5 universe. It's a great intro. And that's what a pilot's supposed to be.
Yeah, I was just going to say, overall, having recently, again, rewatched this, I enjoyed it. And I do feel like that if you've always been curious about Babylon 5, you know, one of the neat things is they do have the episodes now available on HBO Max. So if you have a subscription to HBO Max, you can go check it out. I would highly recommend it. Like I said, I got about four episodes in, and the only reason I stopped is because Eric and I were discussing maybe, you know, doing Babylon 5 for the show. You know what I mean? Right. So I didn't know how much further I wanted to go into watching it. If maybe we might use the concept of I haven't seen these in order, I've only seen spotty episodes, and then kind of watching and reacting, you know, as I'm experiencing them new, but then Eric has actually seen, you know, all of the episodes. So that was kind of my thinking, right? So that's why I stopped. That's the only reason I stopped watching it. But I do think for those of us who like science fiction, who enjoy world building, who enjoy that kind of immersive kind of experience, I do think that Babylon 5 is worthwhile, and I do think the absolutely. Gathering is worthwhile. It's really interesting. But I could also see where, depending upon, you know, when you were born and what you're used to watching, depending upon your sensibilities, it may feel a little dated at times, but in all honesty, I don't think that's a reason not to give it a chance. You know, I feel like that overall what they're doing is so interesting and so layered and complex, in terms of the writing and the structure and the world building and the story that it seems that they're setting up to tell, that I definitely think it's worth checking out and either revisiting it or actually giving it a shot if you've heard of it, you know, but have never actually watched it. So overall, I would say Babylon 5 The Gathering is definitely worth either giving a rewatch, or if you've never seen it before, give it a shot and see what you think.
Totally agree. And just want to add, as far as the actual HBO Max transfer, if you are having problems with the visuals on The Gathering, it gets much better in the second episode. So if that's why you're like having problems with Babylon 5 as you're watching it, saying, wow, the CGI really looks bad or whatever, it's the transfer is much better by the second episode. So definitely give that second episode a chance before you decide on you know, whether you're going to pass on Babylon 5 or not, because it only gets better. Really, it only gets better.
All right. Very cool. All right. So I think that's going to wrap it up for our retro retrospective, or Rogues retrospective retro view. We got to figure out exactly what to call this, I guess, new segment. You know, I think that's going to do it for this. So the other two things we want to do real quick is typically with each episode, we like to do a little pop culture news and potentially a little streaming wars news. My pop culture news is going to be like a bit of a rant that might actually fit in the streaming wars portion, but I don't know if we want to end on a negative note. I don't have a news story. I just have some choice words. So the question we have to ask ourselves, Eric, is do we want to go ahead and get our house business out of the way and then actually do maybe like, you know, actual news segments, or do we want to do news segments and then, you know, and then just kind of say our piece?
Yeah, I think it would be good to talk about some of this in-house business because it is relevant to our format. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to start out because I have to follow up from our last episode on Thursday. So on Thursday, we were having a lot of technical difficulties on Thursday during our show. And I decided that I was going to go ahead and do a Venom trailer reaction. Well, after what has happened, I don't think we'll ever be doing a trailer reaction on this show ever again, at least not for the foreseeable future, because I got a damn copyright flag from Sony for doing a trailer reaction with no audio of the Venom 2 trailer, the Venom Let There Be Carnage trailer. As a result, the episode as it is now on YouTube has been edited, and the offending part of the show has been taken out. So I just want to say screw you to Sony, because I think that's bullshit, and also to YouTube itself. I don't think there's any reason for it. I do feel like I probably would have won the appeal on that, but it's like, why even bother? Our channel's not even monetized. So it's like, why even bother? Why even bother flagging us in the first place, you know? I think it's really silly. There are huge channels with millions and millions of subscribers, totally monetized. The whole basis of their channel is trailer reactions with audio and music, and they get away with it, and then they got to flag us just because I wanted to talk about something that I thought was newsworthy, and that's fair use. So, so apparently, at least from my perspective, and Dave and I think are on the same page about this, doesn't look like we're going to be doing any more trailer reactions in the near future, foreseeable future, and that is why.
I'm going to take it even further and just say, if we don't own the video, don't expect to see it, period. Yeah. I am so over all this nonsense where we keep getting flagged for stuff and we haven't really done anything wrong. And the thing that drives me the most berserk is where I get sort of like a copyright claim for like someone saying they own something. And I'm like, no, you don't own that. So here's the deal on Facebook, my gripes with Facebook. Here's the deal on Facebook. What happened is we got a copyright complaint from two different sources, not on a recent Retro Rogues episode, mind you, but an old In the Studio Retro Retrospective, one of the few episodes that's still floating around on the internet. And it was the original retro review of the original Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno, Hulk television series. Now, neither one of us, this is when Alec Kozak was actually guest hosting, and neither one of us were talking negative about the Hulk TV pilot at all. We were talking about how great it is. I always tell people still to this day that I really, really love the Hulk television pilot because it gives a new dimension to the character. And so we were highly recommending that people search out the TV pilot for the Hulk because it's still good. Even though it's from the 70s, like it's still really good. You really should give this a shot. Like we were recommending it. We were telling people you owe it to yourself to go search it out. You know, now when I originally posted this episode on YouTube, back when I had a YouTube for myself before I pulled it down because I got so angry at YouTube, that one got flagged by Universal. And I kind of understood because I had the original, you know, the Lonely Man theme, you know, was in there. It was the original TV intro because the TV intro is classic. It's also everywhere. It is everywhere. That's the thing that drives me nuts. It's everywhere, okay? But anyhow, I tried to use it, and you may ask yourself, oh, well, what did you do, Dave? Did you download? No, I did not download off of someone else's YouTube. I put in my copy of it on DVD because I own every single season of the Hulk television series. I put it in there, and I pulled it off of that, so I was hoping I wouldn't have to deal, because that's how I did it. I never just downloaded someone's thing and just slapped it into the video, right? I actually went in, pulled it, remixed it, reauthored it, whatever I needed to do with the sound or whatever, and then I would take it and drop it into our episodes. So I went, okay, well, Universal's got a point. So I pulled that video down off of YouTube, and I put that original version up on Facebook because it seemed like Facebook wasn't, you know, being as strict about it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's still a little dodgy, but I thought it was fine because all we're doing is just showing you so you get a sense of what it's like. And then we talked about how great it is and you should go watch it. So then what ended up happening was I cut a brand new, my own interpretation. I went out and bought the rights to the music version of the Hulk intro using still images and graphics that I created using the comic book version of the logo. I created my own brand new Hulk intro, and then I dropped it in there. And then I put that back up on YouTube, which also got flagged. Also got flagged. You can't tell me that you own that anymore. Like, by the time I'm done messing with it, I've now created that. You know, the images, yes, but still, that's kind of dicey. But that's in the past because I pulled that channel down in a fit of rage. It's one of the reasons why, by the way. So a couple days ago, I get this message about this copyright strike on Facebook. And I'm like, a copyright strike on Facebook for what? And then I go and I look at it, and it's the Hulk episode. And I've got two claims on it. One of them's on Universal. They've got a right to complain. Okay. They totally have a right to complain. The second one is some random person I have never heard of before. I have never been to this person's channel on YouTube. I don't even understand how this person even complained about it. And there's a spot on there where I can actually, you know, dispute it, right? Because this guy seemed to be claiming that he owned that episode of In the Studio Retro Retrospective, which no, he the hell doesn't.
Right.
I couldn't get the dispute button to work. It literally wouldn't work. So I couldn't even like say, okay, Universal's got a point. This guy definitely does not own this episode of In the Studio Retro Retrospective. So forget that guy. All right. I couldn't even fight it. So I deleted it. Deleted it again. I have deleted that stupid episode of the Hulk so many times, and it's so infuriating because it's like, all I want to do is tell people the Hulk television pilot is great. You should go watch it. So guess what? The Hulk television pilot, it sucks. You should never watch it. You should never look for it. You should just act like it doesn't exist anymore. I'm about to turn green and break this desk in half because all I want to do is just talk about stuff that I like.
Right.
But apparently Universal and some random dude on the internet who says, I own that. No, you don't, dude. You don't own that episode of In the Studio Retro Retrospective. I own that episode of In the Studio Retro Retrospective. And the fact that you can just go on one of these platforms and say, oh, that's mine, when in no way in the hell ever was it, I got a problem with that. So because of that, unless we own the video moving forward, as far as I'm concerned, you're never going to see any of that crap on this show.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. And I think what's doubly mystifying is, again, we're not monetized. So yeah. I've heard of tons of issues, especially on YouTube, where people claim other people's videos to get their revenue. Well, we're not monetized. So I don't even understand what the motivation is, other than just to be a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it, you know. So
and that's kind of the deal too, even with the Retro Rogues live show that we're doing right now, you know, we're not making any money off of any of this, everybody. So if you're watching this right now, we're doing this because, you know, Eric and I like talking about movies and television shows. We enjoy producing the show for those of you who do enjoy it. You know, we hope that you will comment, you know, tell us about your frustrations with YouTube and Facebook. you know, so we do this show for the people who enjoy watching it. You know, we do this right for you. We're, you know, now we may promote or plug something that we're working on, you know, Kirby Tees or a Bad Bob Productions, you know, movie or something that Eric's working on, like Staycation, you know, like we may talk about things that we're involved with that we're working, you know, working on. And we hope that that will encourage you to go look at it. But no one pays, you know, we are recommending you go watch Babylon 5 on HBO Max. HBO Max pays us nothing for that. We're talking about Babylon 5 because we like Babylon 5. So that's the irony of all this, is that this is just done from a fan perspective because we like something. You know, I could understand if they had a problem with the Hulk video because I hate the Hulk. You know, oh, we don't need that negative thing out there dragging our franchise down into the muck, you know. But I wasn't even talking about that I hated it. I talked about that I loved it. I don't love it anymore. I friggin' hate it now. But, you know, there you go. Well,
I for one won't even go that far, because I think even if you do a negative review, you're entitled to do that. That is fair use. And you know, people are not going to like everything. There will be negative reviews. You know, we've had negative reviews on this show. It happens. It happens. Not everybody likes the same thing. And it's important that perspective be allowed to exist, because guess what? I might not like what you're doing right now, but I might like something else down the road. These are huge studios that do all sorts of different projects. So you just never know. So if you don't mind, Dave, I'm going to move on to pop culture news, because we are running out of time a little bit here. We are trying to keep these episodes, you know, around the hour mark, that kind of a thing. And we're pretty much already there, and we haven't gotten into pop culture news. So the main thing I wanted to talk about, I have two things listed in the description for my tweet that I did. But since this is kind of new, I'm gonna go into this one first, because this is more breaking than the other topic I wanted to talk about. So I recently found out about Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins, okay? I didn't know a lot about this. This is from a Bounding Into Comics article. By the way, hey, I like what they do on Bounding Into Comics, and I'm willing to promote them. So this is a Bounding Into Comics article. It is dated May 14th. And the title of the article reads, Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins reveals first looks at Baroness, Scarlet, Akiko, and maskless Snake Eyes. And, of course, we have the maskless Snake Eyes right here. And you know what? I'm just going to stop right there. So I've heard all sorts of people doing all sorts of commentary because they're not happy about the casting, or they're not happy about this or happy about that. I've mentioned on this show several times that as far as comic books go, the comic books that I read primarily growing up were G.I. Joe and Transformers, okay? And of the two, G.I. Joe was definitely my favorite. I really liked the comic book stories in G.I. Joe, because even as a kid, I thought the cartoon, though I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the cartoon quite a bit, I knew it was cheesy. Even as a kid, I was smart enough to know that you can't have like a bazillion laser bolts going across the screen and Scarlet can't just dodge them all and not get hit. Okay, that's stupid. That's unrealistic. That would never happen in real life. She would get hit when a barrage of freaking laser beams come towards her. And she wasn't, every single joke did that. They would dodge all the, they never got hit or anything. The comic books, they had characters die. They routinely had characters get shot, at least, and get hurt and get hit and were dying and things like that. It was a completely different game. And as far as character, you know, side characters that weren't like major, like actual toys, they killed them off in droves. I mean, in one of the first issues of G.I. Joe, I think it's Scarlet and Snake Eyes, and I think another character. And they're surrounded by bodies, like bodies and bodies of these, and they're not even Cobra troops. They're like these, like Arabian troops or something like that, that they've just slaughtered. I mean, just like all over the place. It's completely different, completely different. And I always enjoyed the storylines of the comic books much more than I did the cartoon. Now, in both versions, Snake Eyes was always a breakout character. I remember the first cartoon for G.I. Joe that came out. There was a significant plot line for Snake Eyes where he got like irradiated and all that kind of stuff. And he was wandering through the snow. And that's how he met the wolf eventually, that became kind of iconic as well. The little wolf that would come with the later version of Snake Eyes, not the original one, but that's from the cartoon. So Snake Eyes kind of stood out immediately, even though in the cartoon, they didn't really know how to use him very well. But he was a star in the comics. And they did this really neat thing where they involved him with Storm Shadow. Storm Shadow was another really cool character that was not done all that well on the cartoon series, but really shined in the comic book. And this relationship between Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow became the center of a storyline in the comic books that I think is one of the most iconic storylines of the G.I. Joe series, and quite frankly, one of the most iconic storylines in comics. It was very, very successful. Very, very successful. What is it about these idiots with their own IP? Because this is Hasbro, obviously, you know, that's involved in making this. You know, Paramount, too, which, yeah, great, Paramount, right? Yeah, they do a great job with IP. They're really respectful of IP. Why the hell do we need to see the guy's face? That's just, I mean, just I don't have to go any further than that. How do you not understand this character, this iconic character, that we need to see his face? That is part of the mystique of Snake Eyes. It's what makes Snake Eyes cool. If you remember his profile card, if you had any version of Snake Eyes as in the original series of toys, I had the second version. I still have it somewhere. You look at that profile card, it's like unknown, classified. We don't know shit about Snake Eyes. That's the allure. That's the mystique. That's what makes Snake Eyes Snake Eyes. That's why he's cool. He doesn't talk. And we all know that he basically had some sort of injury in Vietnam or something like that, and that's why he can't talk. Although I think there was also a version where it was a car accident that made him not talk. Because there are different versions, right? There's sort of what you get from the back of the cards. There's what's in the comics. There's what's in the TV shows. So there's different stories, right? There's different canons, if you will, depending on what you're into. Now there's the movies. But I just feel like I don't have to get any further than this for my own personal sake. This is a character that I grew up loving, thought was awesome, and these idiots don't understand the character one bit, but are fully willing to exploit him for whatever I'm sure is going to be some stupid agenda BS. And I just don't understand it. And I don't have to go beyond this. We do not need to see the guy's face. He doesn't need to talk. The performance is supposed to be in the physicality. I thought that Ray Fisher did a great job as Snake Eyes. You know what I mean? And Ray, I don't know Park. Why they can't. Sorry, Ray Fisher was on the mind because we reviewed Justice League not too long ago. But Ray Park did an awesome job, and he didn't have to talk. You know what I mean? Because he can do a physical performance because he's a real martial artist. Because he's a, you know, legit guy, you know what I mean? I'm just so kind of disgusted with this, and I don't have to go any further than this. I don't have to look at the other pictures and tell you how cheesy this is or that is or agenda anything. Why do we even need to see the guy's face? Just ruining the character.
Well, and you know, I just look at it, in all honesty, if the idea is to give us Snake Eyes' story. And if we're going to be exploring who he is, actually the way to do this from a marketing standpoint is he's looking at the camera and he's taking the mask off, but in the poster, he still would have the mask on, because at least then we know that we're going to learn who the man underneath the mask is. So from a marketing standpoint, this is missing the whole thing. I'm pretty sure this is to satisfy the actor's requirement in his contract. This is not about storytelling. Because that's how you do it. You know, you see him taking the mask off. We're going to see who the man is behind the mask, you know.
That's an iconic cover too. There's an iconic cover called like Unmasking. And I think I have that issue somewhere. It's like Snake Eyes and I think Storm Shadow and I think even Cobra Commander are all taking their masks off at the same time, you know. And of course, if I recall, you still don't see Snake Eyes' face in that issue. You know what I mean? They still won't reveal his face because that was so important to the character. They were just like, no, you know,
right?
You don't do that.
I just look at it from the standpoint of that whatever this version of Snake Eyes is that we're going to get in this movie, he's not going to be the same Snake Eyes that we grew up with, Eric. That's just the reality of what it is. You know, this movie. Just like a lot of other movies right now, and in all honesty, they're being made for someone other than the people that grew up with these franchises. Like, I don't know who they're being made for.
That's what I think. So why not create your own thing? You know what I mean? That's what keeps going into my head is like, okay, so make your own damn character. Now, I realize Hasbro can do whatever they want. They do fully own the character, and Hasbro is on board with this. But it's just like, do something else, man. Make another toy or something like that. I don't understand the point, you know, because... To me, the point of doing this is they want they basically want people that grew up with it to be like, hey, a child of mine, you know, I was really into this. So you should be into this, because parents do that. I've done that to my kids. You know what? I'm like, I'm into this. You know, why don't you check this out? You know, that's what obviously they want. But I can't see, you know, the people that grew up on this stuff flocking to this and being like, oh, this is great. You know what I mean? This is a Snake Eyes that I grew up loving, and they're doing a great job with it. You know, no, you know, it goes also back to the lack of creativity in Hollywood. It's just, why can't they create their own character? They can rip off Snake Eyes and create something very similar. I mean, he's a ninja, man, for God's sake. It's not that hard to do, right? So, I mean, there's tons of stories like that. So, I don't know. I just feel like this is a total betrayal of the fandom. It's total garbage. I, for one, won't be supporting it. I won't be reviewing it. I don't care anymore. They're ruining the character. That's what Paramount apparently does now, is they just ruin characters. Sad to say that, because, you know, Paramount, you know, used to stand for something, used to make some great, great stuff. But now they're part of Viacom CBS. Paramount's not even the name of the actual company, which is kind of funny. Paramount's just a marketing tool now, Paramount Plus. It's Viacom CBS is the company, you know? So I don't know. I'm very disillusioned with it. This is a show, you know, a series that I really enjoyed, the comic books as well, the toys. I was into all of it. And I just feel like they don't understand the character, period. They don't understand what makes him cool, why people like him. This isn't it. We don't. And I hate the fact that actors can't act with a mask on. I've gone off on that so many times with Star Trek and Star Wars stuff, Star Wars especially. Marvel stuff, it pisses me off. They can't act with a mask on. I get sick of it. I don't need to see this guy's face. I don't want to see this guy's face. If he's Snake Eyes, I shouldn't see the guy's face, except like at a convention or something, you know? I do want to mention that Hollywood Jackson's in the house. And he says, that's like covering a Stevie Ray song and changing the lyrics. That's a great analogy, Hollywood Jackson. That's exactly what it is. Except, you know what? It's like I could compare it to Weird Al, but I think what Weird Al does is more respectful than what these idiots do. You know, I like Weird Al, but you know what they're doing is basically they're doing Weird Al, but it's serious. I think that's the best analogy I can give. It's like, yeah, you're right. They're changing the lyrics. It's Weird Al, but they're actually trying to pawn it off like it's their song, as opposed to a parody. Right? It's not a parody. It's this is something I did. You know, I did this. Yeah. No, you didn't.
Yeah, I feel like, and to be honest with you, this will be, I think, the third G.I. Joe movie that they've made. And the second one I thought was okay. But they've all kind of missed the mark. I feel like this one's just going to miss the mark too. You know, so, I mean, they keep changing too much. The thing I liked about the last one they did with The Rock is at least they were trying to stay closer to the source material, you know? But it just seems like with each iteration, they go, well, the problem with G.I. Joe is G.I. Joe, so let's change it, you know? And then by the time they're done messing with it, it's not the same thing anymore. It's like, okay, all right, whatever. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm just going to sit this movie out. and the reason being is because the best Snake Eyes story I've ever read is back here on this bookcase, and I'm good.
Right. There you go.
There you go.
That's exactly right. You know, when Snake Eyes comes out, I should break out my old comics. We can talk about some of those. That's what we'll do to mooch off of these corporate shills and mooch off of Snake Eyes. I'll bring out some of those comics and talk about some real stories that you guys should be checking out if you like this character, if you care about him.
Oh, and there's a great, I can't remember if it was Devil's Due or IDW or who, but there's a great Snake Eyes actually miniseries they did that I'd be happy to talk about. And the whole context of the story is he's an outsider, you know, who basically grows up, you know, not really grows up, but he's nursed back to health and trains, kind of like Iron Fist, right? And, you know, he eventually becomes Snake Eyes, and it delves into the whole rivalry between him and Storm Shadow and the fact that they trained with the same ninja clan, and it gets into all that stuff, you know, and it's really great. I would definitely prefer to talk about the comics, because the comics is the best version of Snake Eyes beyond the classic cartoons in my mind.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think he was underutilized in the cartoons. I really do. I don't think they used him all that well in the cartoons, even though he was still a popular character, despite their lack of vision.
Right. So I don't have any pop culture news or streaming wars. I just had my crazy rant. So that was pretty much what I had for today's episode, is to talk about Babylon 5 and express my anger at all these copyright things that we get. Like, why us? Like, really? You know, we're not even taking money from anyone. We're telling you to go check stuff out. Like, I don't understand what the problem is. So
Hollywood Jackson says Ray Harryhausen, and he was awesome. That's something maybe we could cover as one of his films. You know, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do something involved with him. We'll have to see what's available out there, Hollywood Jackson. Maybe we could do that as one of our retro reviews. That would be kind of neat.
And there's a great documentary about him that was available actually on Amazon Prime, that was really, really good too. There's a really great documentary. I think it's still on there. I'd have to check to see, but Ray Harryhausen is just like amazing. Seven Voyages of Sinbad is just awesome still to this day. As is his Jason the Argonauts. That to me in my mind is still classic too.
My brother was obsessed with that film for a long time. He forced me to watch it. I remember that because he was so obsessed with it. Do you want to, you know, we're kind of at that time point, but I was thinking, do you want to just kind of record a hot take on He-Man? I've got some pictures ready to go, or do you want to just move on and get out of here?
You know, to be honest with you, I mean, I'm good, because I feel like I've complained too much, as it is. I did think it was weird. There was someone who actually, I thought that if they actually read the news article about what was happening with the Masters Universe revelation or whatever, if they actually read the whole news article, they probably wouldn't be as for it as they are, which I thought was kind of funny, because this person like put out a pro Masters of the Universe revelation. And I was like, did you read the article? Did you actually read the article? So let me just throw this out there. Okay. I guess we'll go ahead and do this. I'll try and make it quick. Okay, so here's the deal. The still images, the classic kind of style looking stuff, looks great. Okay, looks, you know, and Kevin Smith was talking about how this is going to be like a love letter to the original Filmation cartoon. And you look at it on the surface and it looks really great. But a while back, there was a news item that had circulated that said what was going to happen in this, and spoiler alert, is that something's going to happen. And He-Man is going to be sidelined, and someone else is going to step into the main role. And by the time that we're done with it, it's not really going to be the same thing anymore. Okay, so if that's what you're into, I think you're going to quite enjoy Masters Universe Revelation. If however, as I'm beginning to describe this to you without throwing around names, you're already going, what? Then I'm going to tell you that this is probably not for you. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. I was really looking forward to this. We talked about this on the show previously. I might give it a chance. I don't know. But I just don't. This is just like the G.I. Joe thing. This is just like the G.I. Joe thing. I don't know who this is for. I have this feeling this is not for me. This is not for people who grew up with He-Man, I don't think. I mean, I don't know how to feel about it, because it was weird, because the actual contents of the article actually confirms the news leak that came out a while back, that Kevin Smith says, well, that's not what we're doing. But then you read the article says it's exactly what they're doing. So,
well, a picture is worth a thousand words. This is the picture that I think most people are reacting to, particularly the people that are a little upset about this. This is the picture that seems to confirms everybody's worst nightmares. This is the this version of Teela. It's not working for me. It's not working for me at all. And I you know, it says here that this is supposed to be Orko, but to me, this looks like Orko's girlfriend, doesn't it? This looks like, remember Orko's girlfriend? She had the little mask on her face. So I'm wondering if that's even Orko, because it's like, I remember Orko did have a girlfriend, but it's like, look at Evil-Lyn. It's like, why is Evil-Lyn even standing there with Teela? That's another thing, is like, we don't have to get into the agenda stuff of this. That's why I was saying with like Snake Eyes, I don't have to get any further than, I don't like the fact that he doesn't have the mask and he talks, because that's fundamental to the character. He doesn't talk and he wears a mask. He's mysterious. Okay. We don't have to get to anything besides this. Why the hell is Evil-Lyn with Teela? You know what I mean? Evil-Lyn is evil. Okay. Evil-Lyn is bad. Okay. She is not an empowering feminine figure. She's not. She is evil. She even betrays Skeletor all the time. She has loyalty to no one. She is a disgusting person. Okay. Watch the much underrated Masters of the Universe of film, the live action film. That actually is a pretty good representation of Evil-Lyn beyond the aesthetics. The major criticism of the live action Masters of the Universe film that I agree with is the aesthetics. There's problems with the way the characters look, particularly Teela. Evil-Lyn, you could also argue. The fact that we do have some new characters introduced when there were plenty of old characters we could have put in there. And people are like, who is this guy? You know what I mean? The lizard guy and the sword guy. And it's like, why can't we just use the characters that are actually in the show? You know what I mean? Even if we have different versions of them. At least they had Beastman, right? At least they had Beastman. So I understand that criticism. Why isn't that criticism leveled here? You know what I mean? It's like, this goes beyond aesthetics. This is about fundamentally who the character is. And we're just going to have Evil-Lyn team up with Teela just because they're both women, apparently. You know what I mean? That's the vibe I get from it. Now, this could be wrong. I could be interpreting the image wrong. But I don't like how they look. You know what I mean? And I hate the idea of them teaming up because they're women. And we need to show more women characters. I just don't like that. I think it's stupid. The show is called He-Man, right? But it's like they want to change everything. And again, it goes back to what we're talking about with G.I. Joe and Snake Eyes. Who is this for? What's the point? Why can't you make your own damn characters? There are plenty of warrior women characters out there. I know that there's some controversy about Red Sonja. They're doing Red Sonja. Well, that's fine. At least they're doing Red Sonja. At least it's Red Sonja. So it's the focus is Red Sonja, right? It is a warrior woman, and that is her own character. Why can't you just do your own show if you want to? Or for that matter, call it Teela. Do a Teela show if that's what you really want to do. But don't pretend this is a He-Man show, you know?
And that's kind of, I guess for me, that's kind of my thing. It's like if you want to do a show focused on Teela, show the majority of images about Teela and tell us that the show's going to focus on Teela. That's fine.
Which you this know? Article, and, by the and, way, and, says that. This Deadline article says it's about Teela. That is in this article.
But if you notice, they're leading with images of He-Man and Skeletor.
Because it's called He-Man.
Well, they'll tell you, well, no, technically it's called Masters of the Universe. But the thing that
oh, that's right. Masters of the Universe. That's right. You're right. You're right. I'm sorry. When you're right, you're right.
But the thing that bothers me about this is the fact that we're leading off with the images that everyone knows and loves, right? But if you actually read the article, you find out the show's going to be about Teela. It's like, well, if the show's going to be about Teela, that's fine. Show us that one image of Skeletor and He-Man fighting and say that they're going to be in it. And then show us the rest of the images with this new interpretation of Teela. And just tell us it's about Teela picking up the power sword and carrying on for He-Man. Like, why don't you just, you know, like.
Because they know none of us are going to watch that. They need to hook us. You know what I mean? That's the whole idea. That's what people are saying. They need to hook you. And the idea is they might be able to do that. In the first 15 minutes, they're feeling like they can hook you. Because the first 15 minutes, as I understand it, is like a total homage. And it's going to feel like it's a direct filmation episode. And that's what they're going to do. Give you the feels, you know? And then all of a sudden, you're trapped. And you feel like, well, that part was good. Maybe they'll come back to it at some point. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's it's pathetic what they're doing. I think it's pathetic. I, for one, hard pass. I will not be reviewing this. I won't be talking about it other than to make fun of it or something like that, or what I hear other people saying.
Well, my whole thing with this is, you know, based on what I'm reading, as more information comes out, I'll make a determination at that time. But on the surface right now, looking at it, I don't think, like I said, just like the Snake Eyes movie, I don't think this is for me. That's all there is to it. You know what I mean? I get the version I grew up with, and actually the Dolph Lundgren movie. I really like the Dolph Lundgren movie. I love Frank Langella's performance.
Highly underrated.
I love Frank Langella's performance as Skeletor in that movie. It's great, you know. And I think I've told you before, Eric, that the way I viewed the movie is the movie took place many, many years after the events of the cartoon. He-Man has stopped being Prince Adam at that point. Everyone knows he's just He-Man, right? There's no reason to change back. And this is how He-Man and Skeletor's story ends. It ends with the Masters Universe movie. That's how the cartoon ends. And for me, I own a lot of the original comic books from back in the day, you know, that DC had published and everything. And I still love He-Man. But I just look at this cartoon and I just realize this isn't for me, you know, and that's fine because I have the DVDs of the original Filmation cartoons. I have a nice transfer of the Masters Universe movie, which I still love. And I still talk about how much I love that movie. And I would still recommend that movie for people who want to try it. So I'm good to
I'll tell you what, when this series comes out, let's review the live action movie. Let's just say, screw them. You know what I mean? And again, we're going to use these corporate shills against themselves. You know what I mean? Everybody will be talking about He-Man. So will we, but we'll be talking about the live action version, you know?
And I tell you, if people would, if you view it in the right context, that movie is really great. Just on the strength of Langella's performance alone. His performance is so great because he is taking
We're going to review it. When this cartoon comes out, this animated series comes out. Hollywood Jackson mentions, I hate when they take an old movie and rewrite the entire script. Just use the original script and new technology to make the movie better. And that really gets to, you know, why do we do remakes, right? You know, what's the point of doing a remake? There's different attitudes on that. I mean, obviously there are, you know, as far as why people do it, as far as why studios do it. I do think there's something to be said for what you just put forth, Hollywood Jackson, is that sometimes, especially with like a genre entertainment, when you talk about like fantasy stuff, you talk about science fiction, there is an argument to remake a lot of this stuff because the technology just wasn't there when they made the film. And because it's progressed since then, and people would like to see it look, you know, see it done in a technical way with what we have now, as opposed to what they had then. And I can see that. I've felt that. But at this point, I don't want them to remake anything, you know, because I feel like they're just going to mess it up because they're always going to take it a step further. They're always going to put agenda on it. You know what I mean? That's just very clear at this point. Fundamentally, I don't think Hollywood understands why people like this stuff. I think they have contempt for it. I really do. I feel like a lot of these people, they have contempt for it. People that are involved in the production of these things have contempt for it. They have contempt for the fans, absolute contempt for the fans. And they're trying to do their own thing, regardless of what it is that the original source material is. They just don't care. They just don't care. He mentions Clash of the Titans remake was so disappointing. I'm trying to remember if I saw that. I'm not sure if I saw that. Did you see that one, Dave? Clash of the Titans, you see the remake?
Yeah, I saw the remake. I saw it in theaters. The original one is still the classic one because it's just, you know, even though it has its problems, between the stop motion animation and the storytelling, specifically with like Caliban and stuff, like it's just, I feel like it's just a far superior, you know, interpretation of the source material, you know, because we're pulling that from mythology, you know. And the other one, the new one, that's okay. And that's kind of, you know, it's just like a lot of this stuff I watch now. It's like, yeah, that's okay. You know, it's not, but it just, it doesn't, sometimes I feel like sometimes this stuff is missing the heart that a lot of times the originals had, you know, and I don't know if it's a disconnect. I don't know if, in all honesty, Eric, it may just be like a complete cultural shift. It's just the fact, like, if for example, I'm coming to the, talk about my own, you know, revelation. I'm coming to the point where I feel like that, you know, the studios, for whatever reason, they're trying so hard to find a new audience that they are okay with leaving the old audience behind. And I'm coming to my own revelation where I'm like, I'm fine with that. You know, if it's not for me, it's not for me, you know? And
I have no problem with that, except why are you using the old IP? I mean, because it seems almost like, it seems almost counterintuitive, but then again, you know, when you see stuff like, for instance, like Magnum PI, you know, and somehow that becomes successful, or Hawaii 5-0, and has nothing to do with the source material whatsoever, but they're able to use the name. The only conclusion I can have is that people are dumb, and they will respond to the name. You know what I mean? And they know it. People respond just to the name, even though it has nothing to do with the original stuff. They're like, oh, I've heard of that before. I'm going to watch it. It has nothing to do with the original show. It's not a continuation. It's not a sequel. It doesn't even have the same tone or anything like that. But they use the name and they get away with it. I always kind of felt like genre fans were a little smarter than that, but apparently
not. I think, in all honesty, it's different. Again, like I said, it is a mindset and a culture shift, because when we were growing up, Eric, if the studios, whether it was television, film, whatever, if they went, hey, this thing is popular, then they tried to find a way to make a new iteration of it. And 9 times out of 10, not always, but 9 times out of 10, it would be a continuation, right? Like, that's normally what they did, right? They were trying to find a way to take that formula that people liked and just make more of it, right? And sometimes they go, oh, well, this takes place 10 years after the last thing you saw, you know? Or this takes place in the far future of the thing you saw. Like, they're always trying to continue that thing that people liked. Now, the goal is, oh, people like that? Well, let's change that. We'll just make a new one. Let's find a way to, you know, like, change.
But that did exist, but they did it differently back then. So what they did back in the day was spinoffs. So they would take a completely different concept and they would introduce it on another show. And then they would have a spinoff, and the format oftentimes was completely different than the actual source show. Like, think about how different, for instance, Different Strokes is from The Facts of Life, right? Totally different situations, right? You know, the Different Strokes is based on that sort of, you know, interracial family, right? And the situation there. The Facts of Life is just a bunch of girls. You know what I mean? Just a bunch of girls in a boarding school. But what they did was they took the popularity of one show to make the other. And they had a loose connection because characters had been on each other's shows, but then after that it was gone. You know what I mean? That it was its own thing. And a lot of people might not even remember that Facts of Life was a spinoff of Different Strokes. You know what I mean? So to me, that's much more in line with what they should be doing, and I'm fine with that. Just like what I was saying, like, if you want to make a Teela show, make a Teela show and say it's a Teela show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Teela and her friends, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? And just do it that way, and it can be completely different. Everybody knows from the get-go pretty much what this is. And they're just like, you can take it or leave it. And if they want to leave me far behind, hey, they have every opportunity to do that. I think it's stupid. You know, I think it's stupid to lose half your audience just because you don't want them anymore because of your agenda. I think that's completely foolish. I don't know how you can run a business that way. Oh, that's right. Viacom CBS is basically going out of business. They're going bankrupt. There's rumors all over the place that they're going to be bought out any day now. You know what I mean? Oh, that's right. Their stock is plummeting like crazy. That's right. It doesn't work. You know what I mean? So I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, it's yeah. Well, like I said, as far as me going forward, you know, because with the format change and everything we're doing, my goal hopefully moving forward is to more recommend things I like and to just not talk about things I don't, you know. And I feel like that, like I said, it's just, you know, if they want to do a continuation and they want to focus on a different character, that's fine, you know. But don't give us, you know, five images of He-Man and Skeletor, one image of Teela, and then tell me this is a Teela show. You know, why don't you give me four images of Teela teaming up with Evil-Lyn, right? And one image of He-Man fighting Skeletor and say...
You know why. You know why.
Sell me what you're selling. Don't show me one thing and then give me something else.
It's a classic, you know? Bait and switch. It's called bait and switch. It's very effective. It's very, very effective.
And here's the thing. I'm open-minded. If you told me it was a Teela show from the jump, I'd be like, yeah, okay, sure, I'll check it out. You know, but now that you're trying to tell me, oh, it's He-Man, 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 and then you go, but really it's Teela. It's like, well, no, I'm good. Like I said,
I showed you the pictures. You can judge on your own what those pictures were geared towards. The article, it says straight up, it's a Teela show. I mean, that's the article itself says that. The Deadline article is honest in that regard and says this is what the show's about. It's about Teela. You know what I mean? So,
well, and let me put it in perspective before people think that I don't like women. Bushytails, which Bushi means samurai warrior, okay, a series I co-created with Len Workman. You know, Bushytails is about four female samurai who are sent on a quest by Hachiman, the Japanese god of war. We published it nationwide, had four female lead characters, right? And we told you on the front end what it was. A lot of people really liked it. I love female heroes.
But Dave, you did something, you know, new, and you did your own thing, and you know, nobody really wants that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Come on, man. You know, that's my point. I mean, you made my point for me. You know, you could be creating your own characters out there, Hollywood land. You know what I mean? And actually show some creativity. And if you want to push your agenda, you can do it in a creative way and come up with your own stuff, but you're too lazy to do it, and you're a bunch of hacks. That's the bottom line. And you're a bunch of hacks.
There you go. I think we're 1 hour and 30 minutes. So we think that's good?
Yeah, we've ranted enough. It's become a rant session instead of real commentary at this point. So.
Yeah, this is hopefully next Sunday, everybody, we're going to do our retro review, and we'll stay more upbeat and talk about things we like. No, that's the whole point of this format change.
We may have some problems, by the way, on Sunday because I'll be in California. So I'll talk to you about that off the air.
All right. Okay.
But just putting that out there on the broadcast as well, that we may have some issues Sunday because I'll be in California. So I'm not sure what my internet situation is going to be there, but we're going to try to figure something out. So.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So let's just go ahead and go to the outro. I want to thank you for hopefully watching and listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. Again, this is our first Sunday afternoon, our matinee, our retro review, our retro retrospective. It's the first one of these that we're doing here in the afternoon. This is going to be one of the new homes for the Retro Rogues Live moving forward. During the week, we're going to have episode Thursday night, 7:00. That is going to be a collector's corner. We talk about comic books. We talk about action figures, statues, all those things we like to collect. And then on Sunday, it will be a retro review, talking about a lot of genre entertainment, again, from a retrospective angle. So we're going to be talking primarily about older content, movies, TV shows, that kind of thing in the genre. So we're going to be talking about sci-fi, fantasy, action, adventure, that kind of stuff. All right. So I want to thank you for watching this episode. Again, my name is Dave Beatty. If you're curious to learn more about me or see what I'm currently working on, you can check that out over at KirbyTees.com. Kirby Tees is my t-shirt company. You can see what we've got to offer over there. We've got a lot of fun new designs that are available right now. We've got the Skeletor shirt if you're into Masters Universe. we've got a Brains or Magic t-shirt by the great Sarah Arrowsmith. We also have some new Retro Rogues designs, such as the Retro Rogue himself, as well as also our, you know, what this show needs is more Picard t-shirt now. But yeah, you can go check that out over there at KirbyTees.com. But enough about that. I want to thank my co-host for providing his unique perspective. As always, Eric, please tell the folks hopefully watching or listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
I'm most active on Twitter. You can find me there at BassGod14, at BASSGOD14. My DMs are open, so you can actually DM me. I don't hide. So if you want to talk to me and suggest something or give us some constructive criticism, go right ahead. That's also the official YouTube and the official Twitch. So if you make a comment there, more likely than not, I will be the one responding to you. And we do enjoy comments, good, bad, ugly, whatever it is. Just don't get personal. That's all we ask. Just don't get personal because you don't know me. So don't get personal. But otherwise, everything else is fair game. You can always disagree with us on this show. But I will once again recommend the whole point of this new format is, hey, it's Sunday afternoon. Hey, go out and check out some Babylon 5. Enjoy it. You know, we reviewed The Gathering today. If you missed it, you can always check it out on the replay. Check it out, and hopefully you'll have a great Sunday. And Hollywood Jackson gives us a little wave there, and he says, great show, guys. And with that, we'll go ahead and leave Hollywood Jackson with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Find the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.